Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Jokes with Mark Simmons, a podcast where I chat to another comedian about jokes they cannot get to work. As always, I'm joined by producer Joel.
Hey,
Joel. I just got an email. What else? Good timing, wasn't it? Do you know what
wow.
it is?
Yeah, I do.
It's from Spotlight, and I get these emails constantly.
Is it a casting?
Yeah, but it's nothing to do with me. My agent's meant to have these, but they always come to me. This is what Spotlight just sent me.
Go on.
Do you want to have a guess what role it is?
Tall, freakish goon.
I can't believe you just did that. Unbelievable. No, Joel, my point was that it's nothing like me, is what they've given me.
Yeah, that was my point.
No, it wasn't. Here we go. Male gardeners. Male, 61 to 69 years old. In B&Q.
You're at least 10 years younger than that.
Got to be within the M25. We're looking for seasoned gardeners in their own gardens. Men who mow, plant lawns, bit sexist. And vegetables. Yeah. All ethnicities. That's good. Good. Tick. Shouldn't be over 69. Oh, rude, 69?
Mm, that's fun.
There you go. I'm just going to reply to that. I get those all the time. And I've tried to unsubscribe, but they just keep coming. I don't want them.
What do you think you'd get found out on first? Not being between 60 and 69 or not being a seasoned gardener?
So I suppose I'd probably have to send a video, wouldn't I?
Yeah.
So I'd have to do it at distance. So I think I could possibly... Well, it's snowing at the moment, so I can't mow in the snow.
Good point. Look, you're sounding like a gardener already.
Well, a poet. The fact that I know that you can't mow when there's when the snow on the ground makes me a gardener, does it?
Yeah.
Is it snowing where you are, Joel?
It did snow, yeah. It's not snowing anymore. But
it's been constant here, and it's still loads of snow everywhere.
Oh, that's nice.
Wow, is it? Can't really go anywhere. The roads are awful.
Yeah, but you aren't going anywhere.
I was going to do some gardening.
What, in someone else's garden?
Yeah. But yeah, can't do any of that. It's cold, though. I went for a walk and there was slippy sliding everywhere, Joel.
It is cold. How do you get on with... What's the heating situation in your house? Because obviously you're living with your parents at the moment. Can you dictate when the heating comes on or do you just sort of have to live with it?
They're pretty good with the heating, actually.
Oh, they like it being on.
They do. And we've got a little... sort of, I don't know what you call it, a stove fire? Is it a stove fire? Is that a thing?
Mm. Where wood the burner?
Is a wood, well, it does burn wood. Yes. Mm. We've got logs, and I'll stick a little log fire on, Joel.
Oh, that's nice.
And, you know, I like to toast marshmallows, so here's to all the marshmallows. There we go. That's one of my new ones from my new show.
That's great.
Yeah, and if you'd like to... hear my new jokes, I'm going to be doing another Zoom soon-ish with all my new bits, so let us know on my social media at Jokes with Mark, and then send us your email, I'll stick you on the mailing list, and then you can come and log into Zoom when I do it.
When I live with my parents, that sounds very exciting, Mark, and I hope everyone enjoys the show. When I live with my parents, the room I was in was like part of an extension that had been built on the house and clearly been built quite cheaply because it felt like it was made of paper. And it was so cold in my room, right? It's so freezing cold. Yeah, I'd wake up and be able to see my breath in the morning. It's that cold. This is completely true. Sometimes I'd come home and if my parents were having company, like they're having a little dinner party, My stepmom would just use the room to store the puddings in.
It's so cold.
So I go into the...
Just the ice cream.
So I go into my room and there'd just be like six creme brulees on my bed.
That sounds nice.
It's not nice. But they also would never turn the heating on. Probably because it would melt all the puddings.
Yeah, and papers, you know, could catch fire.
It could catch fire, yeah.
Yeah, go watch there that.
A little insight there. So yeah. I just eat all the pudding to spite them.
Wow. That's nice. I wouldn't move out if I were you. I think pudding equals better than heat. That's a good question. Here you go. Let's have that.
That's a great question.
Little poll on Twitter at Jokes with Mark. Let us know. Pudding or
warmth.
Heating? Yeah.
You should do a poll on Twitter. Pudding or warmth? Yeah. That's tricky, isn't it? It depends on how warm and what pudding.
Yeah, and how much, because pudding can only last a little while because it's a bit sickly, isn't it?
Yeah. Bowl of ice cream, 23 degrees.
I'm a big fan of warm puddings, though. That's the thing. I'm not as big.
Oh, that's going to warm you up.
I know.
If you have a nice sticky toffee pudding and hot custard, you don't need the heating on.
Oh, I love a sticky toffee pudding.
Yeah, me too.
Anyway, who have we got this week, Joel?
Well, we've got the amazing Mr. Ben Norris.
This is a good podcast. If you're here to listen to Joke Chat, we've got some Joke Chat for you here. We've got too much Joke Chat, and it's tipped over into our Patreon at Jokes with Mark. So head over there if you want even more Ben Norris Joke Chat. You know what I liked about Ben Norris, Joel?
Prepared.
Brought his notepads.
Prepared. Love
Very
a guest who prepares.
Prepared. I love a guest that has his notepads out in front. It's good. Good stuff. Good solid stuff. Let's stop talking, Joel. Let's just listen to it. This is so weird. I can see myself and then I can see the sheep all walking.
I saw that, yeah.
Past
cool.
me. Getting tired.
Yeah. Well, just don't
I get them to
count.
Do that on purpose for the joke. They do it every time I do this. So yeah, that sounds perfect, mate.
Some I've tried, some I have never tried. Some I've tried and it works, but I've sort of dropped it for one reason or another.
Perfect.
Or I can't find a place for it. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Because it's, and the other thing is I've never been a very disciplined comic over the years with regards what my house style is. Right. Do you know what I mean? I mean, you've seen me enough times. I've got routines and I've got a few bits that are just one-liners, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I try and make them sound like throwaway stuff so I can make them fit in. And that's the other reason some of these things have never got into the set, because they're not quite one thing or the other, you know?
Yeah, that comes up a lot with acts that have more of a conversational style, that when they have one-liners, they have to kind of set it up in a certain way to sort of get away with it. Otherwise, the audience is like, what's he doing? Why has he suddenly changed gear into nonsense?
Yeah, no, it can be very confusing. You know, I was slightly frustrated at how we all talk about freedom. And when you see a comic that seems to have a freedom about their performance, that is a wonderful thing. Mm. But it is a contrivance to some extent as well, because ultimately, the audience is in charge, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because, you know, you can be as free as you like and you can have the funniest idea in the world in your head. But if 150 people in a room don't agree with you, at the end of that line where you pause and nothing happens, ostensibly you failed, haven't you?
Mm.
And it's all very well thinking, well, I still think that's funny. But in that moment, something's gone wrong, you know, and it doesn't that situation doesn't exist anywhere else, does it? Everything is, you know, if a rugby player scores a try, he scored a try. It can't just be a try he liked, you know. I think that was a good try, you know. But in our world, there's loads of situations where we're frustrated that the audience isn't quite the right audience for us, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing, is when it works some places and doesn't work other places. So it's just that consistency, isn't it? So are you an act that, do you just want stuff that is consistent throughout? Because I'm like that. I don't really like doing anything that sometimes works and sometimes doesn't. I want it always to hit.
Well, I think it depends what mood you're in, doesn't it? Because I definitely think if I've done stuff that works 50 or 60% of the time, and I find myself in a, let's just say, a golf club, one of those kind of weird gigs, which can be fantastic, by the way. I'm not saying they're all...
kill for one now.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, you look out and there's mostly men of over 55 with red faces and white skin. And there's certain things that it's not in their world and they just don't get it. And I'm frustrated then because I think, no, this is a good joke. Mm. You guys just don't have the reference points to kind of do the maths.
Yeah, yeah.
So I won't feel bad about that. I'll just be feeling slightly. I'll be thinking, well, this crowd's not good enough.
would you then stick a bit in that you know will work for that crowd?
I think I would. I still would. The professional side of me would think, okay, now it's time to get them on side again and to win their trust back. So, and I think that's the professional thing to do. I don't think you should be beholden to any one crowd. Mm. But if you did 20 minutes of experimental new stuff because you thought it was great and they just sat there having a bad evening, I don't think that would be fair.
No, it's a job at the end of the day, isn't it?
Yeah. But I think there's a happy place between those two. I really think it's a mistake to only do stuff that, you know, crowd pleasing stuff, because that we all know that's been the death of some comics, you know, that their set has become blander and blander, and yet more hit the high numbers, you know, hey, they're all laughing. Yeah. But you know, look at them.
That's the beauty of one liners is that you can chuck in one joke that maybe they don't all get on board with because 10 seconds later, there's another one. When there's like a routine, I imagine that's really tough, getting halfway through it and being like, they're not going for this.
It's a horrible feeling. Yeah. And sometimes I think you just have to acknowledge it. You know, I think it is sometimes completely fair enough to go, yeah, this isn't for you, is it, this? And that'll get a laugh usually.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they do recognise and appreciate self-deprecation like that, don't they? If you say, no, I'm failing. I think they find that, British audiences especially, they think, now this is funny. Now the guy's dying and he knows it. Great. So I think that's your get out clause, isn't it? Make them laugh about the fact that you know it's not working. And then hit them with a knob gag.
Yeah. Well, sometimes I think they do just need to be explained to what's going on, because otherwise they just assume you're rubbish. But if you just said to them, that reference point, I'm gathering a lot of you don't know the reference. And all of a sudden they go, oh, yeah, we just don't know the reference.
Yeah.
It's us. It's not 100% him.
But you've also got to be incredibly careful about not patronising them.
That is a mistake. They don't like that. I have made that mistake before. But sometimes audiences, like, I do a thing where I'll say, if I do a cleverer one and they struggled a bit as an audience, I'll explain that some of these are thinkers. But then that's
if only you were.
Yeah. and then sometimes that just makes them think, oh, we've got to think about it, and then they're fine after that. They just they weren't in that gear. But sometimes when I say that, afterwards I then say, so if anyone wants any explained, put your hand up, we'll go through it. And a lot of the time they really laugh at that because they're laughing at themselves. But some audiences don't like that second bit. They think you're being patronising. Oh, he thinks we need it explained to us. So I have to kind of judge the audience. And if it's sort of your Guildford sort of place, I won't say the second one, because the kind of the posh of the place, they don't like being spoken down to in that way. I don't know what...
Yes, because they're looking at you thinking, I've been privately educated, how dare you?
Yeah. That's 100% it. Yeah, but some people's brains just don't work in one linery thinker way, so they just
the other thing is, a lot of the stuff that comics like, when you hear comics in the dressing room shooting the shit and talking about ideas, I think we like stuff where some of the ingredients are, you know, here's the ingredients, I've put most of them in place, all you've got to do is, you know, add hot water and put it in the mug, you know.
Yeah,
this is an analogy on the fly, by the way. But
I love it.
But you know, it's that thing of, you do the last bit and you enjoy the creation of the punchline sort of thing, and I think some audiences just aren't ready to do the work. They, you know, I've literally had audience members say, "Mate, I've been at work all week. I don't want to think too hard." You know,
yeah, I've had that.
Just
yeah.
do the joke. Just do the joke, and they do get move on. You know,
some of the cleverer bits I do. Sometimes I only have those in my show when I do it in Edinburgh, because when I do it in Edinburgh, people come because they like one-liners, and if people like one-liners, they like to have to do the puzzle. They like. You know, they appreciate having to work it out and they get satisfaction from that. But if I'm doing a regular club, I won't even bother with that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, I would have thought most of the more valuable audience members are the ones that will appreciate that you've constructed a thing that you really like, and that you're expecting something of them, you know, that they are expected to do a little bit of the work, and that it is a battle of wits, and they're part of it. It's not just you saying, "Look how clever I am." It could be you saying, "Look how clever we are."
Yeah, yeah, that's
you
know? It. Yeah,
that's what it. Let's. I mean, it shouldn't be a race to the bottom, should it? We should. if you'll pardon me. Oh, you know, it. it's not a race. I stopped. No, it's. God, I've been on my own a lot.
I know. Yeah,
no, it should. We should aspire for more, shouldn't we? We should we should want it to be, you know. Imagine if Shakespeare, halfway through writing a sonnet, thought, "Nah, these cunts will never get this." I think I'll change some of this. That wouldn't have been ideal, but you know, like you say, I do think the other thing a professional comic does is weigh up the crowd and work out which way to go. But you can get that wrong so easily. You can. I have often underestimated an audience. I've looked at them and thought, these look like a real bunch of thicky wife beaters. And then they're not.
They're clever wife beaters.
Or you get a heckle that, exactly. you get a heckle that, you know, is extraordinary. And you have to go, I wasn't expecting that in this Millwall supporters club type room. But... I think it teaches you to don't underestimate people.
So tell us some bits. What have you got? What have you brought with you?
Well, I've gone through lots of notebooks here, and I.
So how many years do they span?
Well, these are mostly from the last 6 years, I'd say.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, in fact, I found some that I tried in an Edinburgh show in 2014. So that's quite a long time ago, isn't it?
I just remembered. So you're talking about sometimes you do jokes, like jokes, and sometimes you do other bits. There's been two occasions where I've written a joke and I've been chuffed with it, and then I've watched you and you've done it, and I've been like,
"Oh!"
But which shows you do write those sort of jokes. Like one was sucker, like what you have to suck a copper.
Oh, really?
That's quite an old one,
right?
It's
like a two-pence piece. That's a really old bit of mine, yeah.
Yeah, I remember. I don't even think I saw you do it. I think someone told me. So they saw me do it, and someone... Because I don't even know if you'd been doing it.
Because the joke's about...
Because it's meant to stop you... if you've been drink driving, if you stick a 2p coin... I don't know if it's an old wives' tale, but that's meant to stop the breathalyzer working or something. And then, obviously, suck
Yeah, so the way I'd say it is a friend of mine said... he thought that you could get around the breathalyzer by simply sucking a 2p piece. And I said, I think you've misheard that. What you've got to do is suck a copper.
So I think I did it slightly different, but essentially it was the same joke.
Right. God, that's quite an obscure reference point to get a gag out of, isn't it?
Yeah. So
I guess it shows that the kind of, you know, the mechanics of the comic's mind to think there's something there. There's something in copper.
I'd heard it as a thing. And then it went from there. So I think someone told me you have to suck I mean, I can't remember. It was a while ago. But a sucker copper.
A coin.
Or a coin. Yeah. So then I worked backwards from there. And then what was the other
I know
one?
Your other one. The other
There's
one
a recent
was
one,
reading erotic literature over these.
Oh, I didn't say erotic literature. So, it shows how that's a better joke that you wrote. So I'd spoke about it on the podcast and it wouldn't work. And I was trying to work out how to do it. And it's so weird because it was that Christmas one we did in Brighton. Do you remember? It was a weird...
Oh, God, yeah.
Was it a
It was a load of buildings,
or...
wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was a corporate in name only.
Yeah. And you did that joke, and it was literally like 2 weeks after I'd spoke about it on the podcast. I was like, that really works, and it's so much better than what I'd done.
It must be gutting, because, you know... So while my version is... Is it you're going to do your version first?
I can't really remember my version. It was something like my girlfriend gets annoyed when I read over her shoulder. No, when I read over her shoulder. And then from there, I was trying to get to we're having sex from behind, basically. Right. And I could never get the word in quite right. But what's yours?
Mine is when I was a teenager that we didn't have access to pornography on the internet, so we had to use our imaginations, and I discovered that my mother had a selection of erotic novels in a bookcase. So I'm not ashamed to tell you, I used to masturbate to my mother's erotic novels, and it really upset my mum because she said she didn't like people reading over her shoulder.
So you're the I hope you're not having sex in that one, but that's the difference, isn't it? That's good, that's really good, and it's so much more
One of those ones where
it's more believable, because it's not really believable that she's reading while we're having sex. Whereas it's more believable that your mum's reading the book.
I've crept up behind her everything, the image is horrendous.
I mean, I look at you and think that is something you would do.
Well, when I was 14, for sure. I mean, you know, if you're horny, you're horny. But what I like about it is on the journey to the punchline, there's quite a few laughs. The audience I think they think I'm just doing a sort of, an observational, like some observational comics don't really have punchlines. It's just amusing stories about things that that happen to them. Mm. So it sounds like one of those. And I'm just sort of admitting that, I used to wank to my mum's books. And it's got that old school proper pull back and reveal punchline at the end. So it's
I think they're the best, because if you're getting laughs on the way and then you hit him with a proper surprise, you're going to get a much bigger response at the end, and it just is so satisfying. But great. But I gave up on that one straight away once I saw you'd done it really well. So
apologies.
No problem, mate. I'll just write more jokes. It's fine.
Well, I mean,
I'll just
machine,
write more of your jokes.
So, well, look, I'll take you through some of these. Yeah. I just, when you asked me to do this podcast, I knew I've got notebooks. I've loads and loads of notebooks, and quite often what I do is I fill a notebook with ideas, most of which will never see the light of day, and then the slightly better ones I transfer to the next notebook, and on it goes. Cool. So I've found notebooks here with about 18 of the same bits just written again, and I think I hope that each time I transfer them to the next notebook that they'll become more doable. Some of them I've done on stage, some of them I've never done on stage, and you said you're happy with that, so
yeah, that's what it's
so some
about.
Of them are just some of them are just aren't bits, they're musings that I think might turn into a bit. So this might fall into that category. I've just written I like it when people say my mind is made up, because you feel like saying, wow, your mind is made up. How existential is that? So your mind is made up, but you're real. These are big concepts. So that there you go. That's not nice. A bit, is it? Or a joke, but it could become one maybe at some point.
I don't know. I like it. Like, it's one of those that is, I think that's a prime example about what we were talking about, as in I don't think a regular club audience may go for that as an idea.
Yeah.
But to me, that feels sort of Stephen Wright, kind of Mitch Hedberg-y in sort
right.
of, do you know what I mean? World, yes, man, it's like...
I had a few a bit like on that same
also
category.
Maybe you're not weird enough.
Well, there is that. And if you try and play out of style, I think that confuses audiences. I think you have to find a way. Sometimes you have to chop it all up and rebuild it and make it work. Make the same thing but work in your voice. And I think there has to be, I mean, that for the first 6 or 7 years of any comic's life, what they're doing is developing something about themselves that's unique, and because there's hundreds and hundreds of comics. You've got to be different to all the others. And the easiest way to do that is to be yourself, or a version of yourself, isn't it? And a big mistake a lot of new comics make is that they're being everyone but themselves. You can hear all the other people they're being. And
all the different comics that they've watched and have been influenced
exactly.
by. I mean, that was me. But you know what I mean? I'd watch.
But that's a fine way in, isn't it? Because it's, you know, you're learning a new thing.
I think when you come to write in an hour regularly, I think that's when you find out what you are, because you can't turn over the material, enough material in all the different styles, I don't think. I think it's too difficult. I think to actually be able to turn over the stuff, you need to know what you do and how your brain works best for coming up with stuff. Because I remember when I started, I'd watch a Michael McIntyre DVD and then I'd write loads of jokes like him. I'd have him in my head because I've just watched that. And then I'd watch Ricky Gervais and then I'd have him in my head. And they're all completely different. And maybe they would be able to do those bits, but just don't.
I had him in my head once and I didn't even get a support tour. what was I saying? There you go. Silly. I've just highlighted a few other bits. So there's not much in this.
So which notepad was that? Was that an old notepad?
So this is a fairly old note. This is probably 6 years old or something. Mm-hmm. So here's another, just one of those concepts. It seems to me that the world is basically divided between two different types of people: those who are comfortable with massive sweeping generalizations and those who aren't. And I'm firmly in the second group. That's not very good. It's just a thought. See, sometimes I just wish I was a journalist, because they could put something like that. You know what I mean?
They
could put
something like that. They all feel like one-linery based ideas. Do you know what I mean? Do you tend to write like that and then make it bigger to make the routine?
And often that's what happens is I go, when I'm chucking a new bit in, because I don't do much, I don't do many new material nights. Because I heard you saying on one of your other podcasts how much you love that feeling of starting again at the beginning. I have to confess, I don't love that. I find it really difficult. Because I've been doing this for 27 years and I find it really difficult to feel like a newbie again. I mean, I like the thrill of a new bit, but I have to have already established myself as a reasonably competent pro comic. And that's a weakness in me, because really I shouldn't give a shit.
You know what? I kind of cheat though a little bit, because I see what you mean. Because I think if I went on stage without my notepad or my clipboard, I think I'd feel the same as you. I'd want them to know I'm good at this. But when I go on and do new material nights with my new ideas, I have them on the clipboard, and instantly that tells them I'm kind of know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. Because I go...
Yeah, Jimmy Carr used to do that.
He used to do that for his act.
Jimmy Carr used to do... He'd do it with his act. I mean, he'd just go, here we go, 47 jokes, strap in, you know.
I watched his... well, basically, he's quite an influence of mine in what liking one-liners, because I remember watching his first Royal Variety when he sort of broke. And I rewatched it the other day, and he has his clipboard then for the Royal Variety show. Like, it's amazing to see that.
Do you know what a great prop that is in so many different ways. It looks like it's just a matter of business. You've actually got stuff on it should you need it, so you know where you are.
Yeah.
It's the perfect cheat, and it makes people think, oh, this guy, he doesn't care. This
look
guy,
how confident he is.
Yeah. But
I think I understand what you mean by that, going on without anything like that and just doing jokes that could be bad. I think I'd probably feel the same as you. But I feel like because I do it in that certain way, I get the buzz from, I don't know if this is funny or not, but also they...
Yes, the last three or four new... I have done three or four new material nights maybe in the last year, the year before the apocalypse, you know.
Yeah.
And I did that exact... I big bit of card folded in two with lots of just reference points on it. And I made it very clear that's what I was doing. And I did actually really enjoy that, because like you say, the audience are, it was a new material night, so they knew that's what we were there for. But it was like they were in at the beginning of something, and that you weren't promising a great deal, you know. Yeah. But so they were surprised at any of it being anywhere near sort of club standard. And because a lot of these ideas have been knocking about in my head for a long time, some of them were pretty good jokes, you know. So I was able to really enjoy it. And it actually made me think, I must do this more often. One of the reasons I didn't do many new material nights is because, I had a wife and three kids, and I was doing four nights a week, you know, making my living on the club circuit. And to say to them all on a Monday night, I'm off out to earn no money and not spend any time with you again, it was difficult. But now they're teenagers and my wife doesn't love me anymore, it's much easier. I'm joking.
It's actually quite where Zoom gigs are quite good now, if you like playing them, because you can do them and then you can be back in the house in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Which is...
No, I've only done a handful, but I've done no new material ones. But are there new material Zoom gigs?
There are a few. I did one. Do you have a gig for Ryan Mould at the Attic? In Oxford, the Attic.
Mould in the Attic.
Right,
seems
right.
Inevitable. is that the one in... is Andrew Bird something to do with it?
Yeah, I think he does one at their other venue. They've got two venues, one in Bicester, yes. One in Banbury.
But I've done one of them.
I did one of the his new material ones last night. It's just sort of 10 minutes. It's a fair amount of people, and I literally went on with loads of new stuff, but it was great. It gave me that buzz, and I now know that a lot of the stuff I wrote isn't shit, so it makes me feel confident to write some more now.
Isn't it amazing that the difference between a line that's been said in a room before and one that hasn't, you know?
Yeah.
If you've tried some new material a couple of times and it's got laughs, the third or fourth time you deliver that material, it's almost ready because you believe in it. You believe in it. And it's just so... I think people who aren't stand-up comics are surprised at that difference.
Yeah.
I think they think you could just write something, look at it in a notebook and think, right, that's a good joke. And of course, we all think that. We think, that's a pretty good joke. But the audience is the one... You know, that's... Mm. If three or four audiences say, no, it isn't, it probably isn't. You know? And... It's so, and that feeling in your chest when you fail is hard.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons, that I do it with a clipboard, and I just have the mic in the stand, and I just say the jokes, because if it gets something, I know that when I come to perform it and I'm walking about the stage like I would normally, that will add to it and it should get a bigger laugh. So it tells me that if it gets anything... I think, you know, when I perform it properly.
Potential.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Oh, you got the joke police coming after.
Oh, you can hear that.
Only a little bit.
Well,
bit
this is Southeast London. I imagine somebody's just entered Tesco's without a mask. And
So what else have you got down?
I'll just whiz through a few of these.
Yeah.
So bread. They say bread's fattening, don't they? Bread, fattening. And yet the French, they eat lots of bread. And we don't think of the French as being particularly chubby, which just goes to show how many calories you can burn off simply shrugging.
that's a funny idea. Has that been tried?
I've tried that a couple of times and it got laughs. I think it was just one of those bits that didn't find a place.
Yeah, you're right. So I think if you just said that and then moved on, it would be a bit weird. Thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or if there is any French in, like in the gig, and you could just say, "Oh, I love the French," and then go into that as a bit, I guess.
Well, my go-to French bit, if I ever had a French person in, I would say, "Oh, I love the French. I love the language. It's so beautiful. It's so sexy, isn't it? Like the French, for instance, the French call the orgasm la petite poix. La petite mort, which means the tiny death." Petit pois means tiny peas. You don't want to get them too mixed up. Come back from Tesco's with a bag of frozen spunk. Or worse still, chuck frozen peas up your wife's back. There you go. That's a bit X-rated.
So would you? Yeah. So would you always do that bit, or would you judge it on the crowd? Like,
well, that's a good example of a bit that I rarely did, unless there was some
the same thing, really.
A French reference, you know.
So that other one you just said, if it's a crowd that you don't think the X-rated version would work, you could then dip into that, I suppose.
Absolutely, but I need to remember it. That my other major problem is that I am not brilliant at remembering things. So once I get going on a bit, then it all just...
I tend to be really bad at remembering things in general, but with jokes, I tend to be all right. I don't know whether that's just because I prioritise them in my head. I don't know.
I've never understood how one-liner merchants like you can possibly know where they are in the set, you know. Because a lot of my routines are 2 or 3 minutes long, and then the end of the routine... there'll be some kind of linking device in that reminds me of the next 3 or 4 minute routine. But when you've just done one line, then one line, then one line, how do you know where you are?
So right. there's a link in my head, even if it's not apparent to everyone. There's a link to the order that I'm doing everything. But because I've written so many jokes now, I've just sort of, I can go into the crowd and just
ask for a topic.
Or ask a question or anything, or where are you from? And then I've got a joke. I've got some French go-to jokes. I've got other bits pieces like that. Like, I've got a joke I really liked, but no one gets it because it's not that funny. It's just sort of clever. But unless you speak French, you won't really get it. And if you do speak French, you just think I'm just saying a normal phrase. So I say, I've been learning a lot of French, you know, bonjour, which is of course hello. Au revoir, which is of course goodbye, and bien sûr, which is of course, it's of course. So,
I see. Right. See, I was hanging on there for the next bit.
Yeah. And I think that's what happens, that people do. And if people don't know what that is, it just doesn't work. It's just, but if there's someone French in, I'll do it and then sort of play off it. Because you can then play off that they're the only ones that understand it. And then you can generate laughs from that.
Would that put you off doing that bit, or are you just happy to do it and see where it goes?
I feel comfortable enough where I don't care, as in I'm confident enough that I can just maneuver it back into the gig from that, because I establish, as soon as I go into it, I establish, oh, I've got a French joke that never works, but because you're here, I'll do it just for you. So by doing that, the audience aren't expecting to get it, so they're not disappointed if they don't.
Right.
But it does need that. If I just went into that joke straight away, it wouldn't work in the room. It could derail the gig.
I mean, a lot of these, I think one of the problems with some of these bits is that they need to be developed, you know, and they haven't really come out of the book. Here's one. This worked quite well, but again, I didn't find a regular place for it in the act. There's a lot of products, aren't there? There's a lot of products out there with strange labelling. See a lot of strange labelling. For instance, I was in my local cafe the other day, and up on the sign, on the specials board, they had carrot and cumin soup. Now, if there's one thing I don't want to find in my soup, it's carrots. Can't stand them.
That's so funny. That's really good, because the audience think they've got to the joke early, essentially.
Yeah.
And then you've swept it away, the rug away. Yeah, that's great. I like that. So have you tried that at all? No?
Yeah, that's been done a few times, and that was part of I had 4 or 5 jokes about labelling. I'll cut and see if I can remember any of the others. I used to do a bit about a washing powder, a detergent that came out a few years ago. And the poster said, now with the mysterious scent of jasmine and black gardenia. And I don't know about you, but I don't know what either of those two things smell like. But if there's one thing, I don't want my pants to smell, it's mysterious. I wouldn't want anybody sitting next to me going, that's mysterious. Your jeans smell mysterious. Do you think perhaps they didn't dry properly?
So did you just see that on a product and then?
I remember the very moment that I was on my way to a gig in Liverpool many years ago, and I saw the poster and I thought that Jasmine and Black Gardenia, mysterious. I'm going to talk about that tonight. For just,
right.
just for some
so you
reason.
Just went on stage.
So I just went and started riffing about that and then wrote it in a notebook and then tried to develop it into a bit.
Right.
So that's not something I always do, but...
Was it better on the first day because it was fresh and you'd just seen it, do you think?
No, that was an example of something where they went, hey lad, what? I think it got giggles like, yeah, that's an amusing idea. Perhaps right. you should write a bit about, you know. And so, but I do, because I'm not a prolific writer, I do often rely on my improvisation on stage to turn into a bit. Because right. I am in the most, I'm in the best place for productivity right in the middle of a set because I'm full of adrenaline. Mm. People are actually sitting in front of me laughing. I'm feeling the best about myself as I felt for 24 hours at least. And yeah. funny ideas are occurring to me because I'm being funny. But, right, you know, yeah. the following rainy Tuesday afternoon, sat at my breakfast table, I ain't being funny, and I find it much more difficult to find the funny, you know?
Yeah.
But if I've got the seed of an idea from the funny, where, you know, from the place where it was happening, then I can remember and put myself in that position again.
That's good. So yeah, because I can't ever do that with what I do, really, unless I do a quick comeback from something someone said and then think that wordplay works and then work out how to make it into a joke. But on the way home from a gig, I'm at my best coming up with ideas because I've got that buzz and you've been in, I know what you mean. You're in that headspace of funny.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah, I can relate to that, which is really annoying because then you've got to pull over to try and write your ideas down or the amount of jokes I've forgotten.
Well, pull over. I mean, that's a bit safety conscious, isn't it? I mean, I don't know if you can't.
I was at a sucker car. Hold this.
You telling me you can't hold a steering wheel and a biro? Come on, mate. So let me have another look at my book here. Remember, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem, or you're insoluble.
But that's not. If that works. But that's really one-linery. I know it's a weird yeah, way it of saying one-linery. It, but it's like it doesn't 100% suit you, does it? In
no.
But it is funny, and I think you would get laughs for it. But I think if you were I feel like you need a weirdo character that you could just sort of break out every so often.
Yeah.
And just because that's, to me, that's...
That would be fun.
That's that kind of... It's the same thing. It's that kind of Mitch Hedberg-esque kind of way of thinking, I think.
Yes, but isn't it irritating how, in some ways, how confined we are by... All the work we've put into being the person that works on stage is also a bit of a prison in some ways because you think, well, I'd like to, you know, musicians can go, hey, I've done a country and western album. And people are like, oh, okay. I mean, that's probably a bad example, but, you know, I think it's hard for a comic to, in 20 minutes into your set, to just go, no, I'm going to be someone else. I'm going to do a different thing.
Yeah, well, something like occasionally... See, I rarely come up with, like, have stories or things happen to me that I think are funny enough to do on stage. But occasionally I do, and I can't do anything with it because it just seems so weird. It doesn't work because all of a sudden I'm saying, no, you have to believe me. This is true.
Yeah.
Whereas all the other stuff, they just know it's not true. Whereas a bit Absolutely. Where they rely on it being true. The only way it's funny is if it's true. Just jars.
Yes, and
much.
I think the exact opposite is true, isn't it? If you've spent the whole set convincing people that everything you're telling them is part of your hilarious life, and then you say, "So I was sucking off an alien," you know, it's that's going to be tricky.
That's not true.
Well, it depends what you mean by alien. It was in the back of the lorry. He was very cold, I'll tell you that. Very cold. That's not nice. Don't put that in. Okay, let's do some tasteless stuff. So here's one. My uncle, after 47 years working for the same firm, when he retired, they gave him a golden handshake, which I thought was a bit weird, you know, pissing on his hands.
So the child, so one-linery saying hands twice is a little bit, but I don't know if I care actually with that one.
I thought because the emphasis was slightly different, it kind of you maybe just get away with it. And also, there's no other way of saying hands, is there? Pissing on the ends of his arms doesn't work, does it? And his golden digits. Handshake is the expression, so you can't replace anything there. So actually, you've either got to abandon the idea or do what I did, write it in a notebook and never say it.
Hang on, so in that joke, someone's told you they've had this golden handshake and you've assumed...
I guess that's how that works. That I think what a golden handshake must be like a golden shower. Yeah.
Would it make it funnier if it was a way to make it that someone said you have to give someone a golden handshake and you then misinterpret it and piss on their hands?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know whether that would up it. I mean, it makes it is more unrealistic because the original version, it's realistic because it's just your thought that you've got wrong.
Yes.
Whereas actually following through. Whereas I feel like in a one-linery set, you might get away with it more because everything's made up pretty much.
I get, you know what? You just made me realise there's yet another way of approaching that one gag and saying, so my uncle retired from his 47 years in his office recently and he told me they gave him a golden handshake. And I said, what was it, cash or a watch or something? He said, no, they pissed on my hands.
That rhythm is so much better.
Is it better?
Joke wise, that felt really good rhythm to me. That was
right.
I really like conversation jokes as well.
Right.
Personally.
Yes. Well, yeah.
So I like the back. Okay. And forth.
Well, there you go. We've actually workshopped something there.
Well, you've got three different versions of trying that now, so you've got no excuse, mate. You got to do it.
Okay, we're on the tasteless topic, aren't we? So here's another one. It's another uncle one. Uncles are very useful because they haven't got the emotional attachment with their parents. I have such strong memories from my childhood linked to smell. Like I distinctly remember my uncle's MG sports car. I remember the smell of that car so well. It smelled like sex with a nephew. It's not nice.
Have you tried that? Or did you just think of that and go, that's not ever...
That's staying in the book.
Yeah. It's interesting what you said about the uncle thing being... Because with the emotional attachment with your parents, but also for the people listen... So if your parents watch that, then it is about them. There's no one else it could be about. But with uncle, it could... You've got lots of different people that could... So if an uncle watches it, if Uncle Steve watches it, you might be talking about Uncle Derek. Do you know what I mean? So there's not that kind of...
I had a lot of uncles. My father was one of 14 Catholics.
Oh, wow.
So we had a lot of uncles. Now I could talk about all of them with impunity because every single one of them is dead. I can do any uncle stuff I like. Do you want some more?
Let's do
this one. This isn't filthy. I like the concept of hidden tracks on CDs. Do you remember hidden tracks on CDs? Mm.
Yeah.
So you let the CD play, and if you left it 2 minutes, suddenly another track would come on. Sometimes it would really put the shits up you if you were a bit stoned or something. But I like the concept of hidden tracks on CDs so much that sometimes I come back on stage about 5 minutes after the gig's finished and do one more joke. And often it gets a very similar reaction.
So to me, what I like about that is if you were doing an hour, you could do that joke earlier in the set and then at the end of the show, just as everyone's leaving, you could come back on and it'd be a lovely call. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And
yes, it's a good idea.
The reviewers would love that. Do you know what I mean? It was he's put a lot of thought into that. That's great.
Right, I'm going to whiz through a few of these so that I don't lose my confidence in them. Or I should lose my confidence in them, probably. Hey, kestrels, right? Kestrels. I read that kestrels mate for life. And yet, I've not heard from Tarquin since June.
I like it, but it's silly, isn't it? It's a bit too far. It's silly, fetched, maybe.
It's like naughty Tim Vine, isn't it?
Yeah.
If Tim Vine would do a joke about having sex with a bird, then that's the one for him. Our new doctor.
Do you think Tarquin's a bit? Tarquin's threw me a little bit as a name.
Oh, okay. Do you know? I was trying to think of a good name for a kestrel.
Yeah, I don't know.
So I don't know why.
But Tarquin just seemed really out of nowhere. But then what? Yeah. But then no kestrel really has a name.
Bob? Bob the Kestrel.
Maybe, yeah.
It's quite a tricky one, isn't it? And Flappy? It's a good... Flappy.
See? Or something like nickname-y for a bird. Pecky. Pecker.
Here's one for your listeners. Write into Mark with a suggestion for good names for a kestrel.
What do you think? I mean, Kez.
Well, Kez was the famous film. Yeah, very good.
I saw a thing the other day. Someone posted the other day a clip from it. I haven't ever seen the film, and it's got that guy, that bald guy, and he was in a lot of films back then. He was the teacher.
Yes.
But he was in something else that I used to watch when I was a kid on VHS. I couldn't think what it was, but I really recognised him. Was he a wrestler or something?
If he was, he kept that quiet. But he was a... I'm probably 20 years older than you, so I remember him very well. Brian, can't remember his name. I remember him very well. I don't remember what he's called. But he was in lots of stuff like that. He was always the angry, bluff northerner. Do you know what? I just remember what else he's in. He's in American Werewolf in London. Remember? And he's one of the various angry men in the Slaughtered Lamb, when they go in the Slaughtered Lamb. Rick Mayall's in there as well. Remember? So they all turn around and it goes silent when they walk in. And Brian Glover.
Oh, well done.
I think it's Brian Glover. And he follows them out of the pub and says, stay on the path, lads. He's worried about them. And great film, right?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen it for years.
Oh, it's good. We watched it recently.
I've been going through loads of old films in lockdown. There's nothing else to do. So I'll look that up.
Yeah, no, it's really worth seeing again. So here's another filthy one. My son, I shouldn't have prefaced it like that, because you're not meant to know that yet. You remember how jokes work? So my son came home from school the other day. He said, Dad, we had a really weird test question. It said, explain what an anal orgy is and provide examples. And I said, do you think it might have been an analogy?
Oh, my God. That's... Does that work?
I've only done it a couple of times.
But I mean, as in written down.
Anal orgy, analogy. Well, obviously, it would have to be written down wrong, but it's mostly there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's...
Analogy.
That's... Maybe, what if... Yeah, that's... I've never... That's really good. I like that.
It's
a bit like the Catholic, one.
Right.
And the... what's the other one? The Ray therapist... Something
for... Oh, Psycho the Rapist.
Psycho the Rapist. Yeah, it's got...
There used to be at least
field.
Two comics with that gag on the circuit at the same time. When I very first started doing comedy in the early 90s, there was at least... I think Noel James did it, and there was at least one other comic doing it at the same time.
I've seen Jimmy Carr do it in a DVD.
Right.
But Noel James has had a lot of jokes like that that have found their way elsewhere,
yeah. Really annoying.
So
he's a very funny man.
Yeah,
he's a very funny man, isn't he?
Oh, he's so good. He's so good. I did a lot of gigs with him early on when I was comparing for Lone Star in Kent, and he did a lot of shows. And just when he's on a roll, it's just unbelievable. Once the crowd are with him and he's got them, he just keeps going and going and going and going. And to do that with one-liners is really amazing, I think.
Yeah, because he's genuinely, he is an eccentric gentleman, and in the best possible way. And I think audiences might think he's putting on an act. Whereas once you get to know him, you're like, no, that's Noel, right?
Yeah.
And that's really funny, because this is a man being a funny man, not someone pretending to be a funny man. And I've always really been very fond of his act. Yeah.
Mm. With the analogy joke, could...
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently: Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Would it add to it if it was... Who did you say said it? Your son?
Yeah, I say my son came home from school and said he had a weird question.
Would it add to it if he was dyslexic in the joke? Or do you think that it doesn't really matter if it's the wrong spelling? Because I, to be honest, I think people will laugh without really thinking about the correct spelling. But sometimes with jokes, subconsciously, if something isn't quite right, it can stop people laughing. So I don't know.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I've had several jokes over the years where I've said to other comics especially, why doesn't this work? I think this is really funny. And oftentimes it's because I'm willfully missing the thing that's tripping everyone else up. Because in my head, you know, do you know what I mean? I've decided it's funny, so I'm deciding not to think about that middle bit that's making everyone else go, but that doesn't make any sense. Because in my head, it's like, well, don't worry about the details. But of course, the details are important. But I think anal orgy analogy are close enough, you know.
Yeah, I do.
You know my Cockney joke, you know, the Faz and Pand one? Is it similarly...
Which one's
you know,
that?
It's a, so I say, I met this Cockney bloke, and he said, the economy's fucked. I said, what do you mean? He said, I just heard on the radio, there's only a Faz and Pand left in the world. And I said, no, pandas in the wild.
Yes, I remember that. That's great.
So
that's the same thing, but that works.
It's a sound joke. It's a joke about sound and language, isn't it? So
yeah.
I'm sort of hoping that anal orgy can fit into that same
I think that's good.
Place.
Where would you put that as a... Have you got a bit that...
And that's another reason why some
ironically,
of these things
stayed
in
it?
The book. Yeah. I think there's a clue in the question.
Ben Norris! Hashtag awooga to Ben Norris. There he is. Good stuff. And like I said earlier, if you want more Ben Norris joke chat, head over to Patreon. com/jokeswithmark. You can sign up there from as little as £3 a month. Really helps out the podcast. Joel,
Mark,
we had a nice review on iTunes.
Did we? What did it say?
I can't remember.
Did they say anything nice about me?
I don't think they did. I think actually I'm regretting this now, because I think they said something nice about me, and I feel a bit weird reading it out, so I don't think I will.
Do you want me to read it out?
Have you got it in front of you?
Yeah, I have.
Okay.
It's from Cole Stewart.
Ooh.
I'm big on wordplay, timing, and technical aspects surrounding comedy, so this is the perfect podcast for me.
Oh.
Mark is so clever, and it's enlightening listening to comics
so
speak about their broken jokes. perfect. 5 stars.
Oh, but that's very nice.
Thank you very much, Cole. I mean, it's interesting that he didn't mention me, but I'll take it as read that.
I don't know why he didn't mention you, Joe.
No, it's weird.
Do you think he thinks...
Because I'm the one sort of edits it to make you sound clever and takes out all of the really stupid stuff you say.
I do say a lot of stupid things, Joel. But yeah. Actually, most of if the you time, think, you do if you keep think, the stupid stuff in.
If you think you've heard Mark say something stupid on the podcast, you have no idea what you've not heard.
One day we'll release all the stupid things I've said.
Yeah, if you ever slight me in any way, shape or form, I've got the mega tape ready to go.
I think stupid things are endearing.
What about actually. Racist things? No, dear, that's just some Joe. Of the guests. That's some of the guests. It's not Mark.
No, that's just Joel being a silly boy. So if you'd like to leave us a review on iTunes, head over there. That'd be much appreciated. Joel, well, we're going to carry on chatting in the Patreon in a minute. So
yeah, we are.
We're going to do a little bit of the old Mark and Joel on demand. See what we've been streaming. But for this... podcast, is there anything more from you, Joe?
Nothing more from me, Mark. Anything more from you, Mark?
Nothing more from me, Joe. Hashtag Awooga, everybody.
Awooga.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.